Thanks to a confluence of commercial and social factors, the Cincinnati-Dayton region has played a unique and consistent role in bluegrass music from its beginnings in the 1940s to today. Exploring bluegrass of the Miami Valley, the artists, the literature, history, and culture that produced it and sustains it, it's the upcoming lecture series, The Bluegrass Musical Heritage of Southwestern Ohio. Good evening, I'm Elaine Deal. Joining me in the studio this evening, Dr. Curtis Ellison, Chair of Appalachian Studies Committee at Miami University Hamilton, and Brian Powers, Reference Librarian from the Cincinnati Public Library. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Ellison, I mentioned factors that contributed to the development of bluegrass music in the Cincinnati-Dayton area. What are some of those factors?
Well, we want to put the production of bluegrass music in this region into a larger historical context, and that context is the Great Migration from the South, generally and specifically from the Appalachian region, throughout the 20th century up until the 1950s and 60s and 70s. There was a steady stream of Appalachian out-migrants coming into the Miami Valley, and they brought with them many of their traditions. The Appalachian heritage is something that the universities and scholars and people interested in local history are fascinated to discover. All sorts of traditions came with Appalachians into this Midwestern region, but the one we're focused on is the bluegrass music tradition, which flourished here throughout the mid-20th century and is still alive today.
Would the migration have been primarily caused by economic factors?
Yes, there were cycles of economic distress in the mountains as various industries, particularly coal industry, rose and collapsed with economic change. So that was a push. There was also a pull. All of the cities up and down the Miami Valley were heavily industrialized, and especially after World War II, they became really important centers of industrial development. But that was true as far back as the mid-19th century. This was a heavy industry region, and so people came here to work.
And this lecture series begins on March the 7th. There are five lectures, annual track, the migration and the development of the music. How did the music itself develop? Who were the early performers and writers, Brian Powers?
Well, I think most people say the father of bluegrass would be Bill Monroe. There's been a lot of country music in this area before Bill Monroe did, you know, bluegrass on the Grand Ole Opry back in, I think it was 1946.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a plaque out there outside down there in Nashville that says that's where bluegrass started. But obviously this area has had a lot of country performers. I mean, King Records, which I'm interested in, done a lot of research on. I mean, that started as a country label. You had people like Grandpa Jones, who was doing old-timey music, which is sort of related to bluegrass, you know, banjos and fiddles and stuff. A lot of that was happening here in Cincinnati, right over like at Music Hall. In the 30s, they used to have fiddling contests and stuff. So you had a lot of that happening even before what would be called bluegrass in the mid-40s. And then when that started happening, there was a lot of recording studios here in Cincinnati that started to record bluegrass, King Records being one of them. But there were a couple other studios here in town that was doing that. There was the Herzog Studio, which did recording. Foggy Mound Breakdown was recorded in downtown Cincinnati, probably one of the most famous bluegrass songs you can think of. There was another studio, not as well known, in Northside that did bluegrass recordings, and Sonny Osborne from the Osborne Brothers did his first recordings there as a teenager in like 1950.
So you said King Records, and a lot of people probably whipping their heads around right now because they think of King Records as being nothing but R&B. But you said it started as a bluegrass or country label?
Yeah, because WLW, big radio here, he brought a lot of talent here, and there was a lot of demand to broadcast country music because we were near Appalachia and there were a lot of farmers and stuff. So they were trying to bring music programs, and they would have the Boone County Jamboree, and that kind of thing was happening with WLW. Sid Nathan, who started King Records, he had a record label here, right in, actually a couple blocks away here from Music Hall, where he had Over the Rhine people, who were mostly Appalachian migrants, coming into a store to buy stuff. Realized that he had these musical performers who were on WLW, like Grandpa Jones and Merle Travis and the Delmore Brothers. And that's how he started King back in 1943. But then he, you know, once bluegrass got going too, eventually when he started to stop trying to compete with Nashville, because Nashville just sort of got much, much bigger in the 50s, he really, more or less, by the mid-50s, was concentrating mostly on the bluegrass music, like the Stanley Brothers and Reno and Smiley. You know, he had a different market that he was trying to plug into.
That's Brian Powers with the Cincinnati Public Library, and Dr. Curtis Ellison from Miami University is here as well. Dr. Ellison, I'm going to paraphrase the Supreme Court judge. I can't define bluegrass music, but I know it when I hear it. What makes something bluegrass?
Bluegrass music is a kind of fusion music. It relies on traditional old-time rural or mountain music. It's very acoustic. It relies on jazz rhythms. It relies on pop tunes. Bill Monroe, who was mentioned, one of the formulators of bluegrass, put together a band that was all acoustic, and it was bass, guitar, fiddle, mandolin, and banjo, and that became the standard bluegrass configuration. And there are many sort of ritualized styles of performance that characterize a traditional bluegrass music. But in this region here, there were people producing the music, as Brian suggested, recording the music, and playing the music in all sorts of formal, informal, and business venues up and down the Miami Valley.
And a very signature style of harmony vocals as well. Just really tight 3- and 4-part harmonies. A lot of sibling groups in bluegrass as well, so you would get that beautiful blend and the gathering around one microphone.
That's right.
Sort of the musicians mixing themselves. And that's the thing that all of a sudden you're kind of seeing, again, a real resurgence in this very fresh, very sort of natural form of music. Brian, what do you attribute the resurgence of these instruments, seeing the banjo in groups like Mumford & Sons, an English band? What do you think people are responding to?
It's authentic music. You know, it's not synthesized. It's real, and it's usually recorded live. You know, it's not, it's almost like a recorded performance when it's recording, but there's just a real love of it's spontaneous and it's authentic. And I think as people, things gets more digital and more technical, people just love stringed music. There's something about that that I think people really connect with.
And it's generally happy, even when they're singing about heartbreak. You can dance to it.
Well, it'll have a driving rhythm.
Dr. Curt Ellison, I detect a touch of an accent. Where are your roots?
Well, I grew up in an Appalachian coal mining town in North Alabama. Some people don't realize the mountains of North Alabama, just north of Birmingham, were a coal field. That's where I'm from.
And are you a musician as well, or just have a passion for the music?
Well, I've played a lot of music in various bands, but today I mostly write about it.
And teach.
Teach music, yes. I teach a course on Appalachian music and cultures.
And you are in charge of this wonderful lecture series beginning on the 7th of March, going through May 21st. Most of the lectures at Miami University and the final one at the Cincinnati Public Library. Some great names. Let's talk about some of the guests who will be coming. Dr. Ellison, I saw someone on here named Mullins. Any relation to Moon Mullins?
Yes, absolutely. This is Daniel Mullins, and he's a grandson of Paul Moon Mullins, who started WPFB Radio in Middletown, had tent shows. It was an extremely important venue for bluegrass performers, national performers who came here, and others who came from here to join nationally known bands. And so Daniel Mullins is going to talk about Moon Mullins and the bluegrass broadcasting tradition in the Miami Valley in a program on Tuesday, March 7, with Philip Obermiller from the University of Cincinnati and the University of Kentucky Appalachian Center. And he's going to talk about migration and how that set the stage for this music in southwestern Ohio.
And then in April, I see another Mullins. This would be Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers performing some music, Brian Powers. It looks like kind of the party in the middle of the lecture series.
Well, it's pretty exciting to have Bobby Osborne come. You know, Bobby is, I think, 86 now. But, you know, he's the first guy to do bluegrass recording at King Records in 1950, right before he left to join the Marines and he fought in the Korean War. But, you know, he's part of the Osborne brothers, who are legends. And so this is a very special thing that we're doing. And he's got roots in this area. I don't think I actually realized that until I got involved with these guys last year, that the Osborne brothers had these connections here in this area.
That's a live performance and a discussion happening on Tuesday, April 25th at the Wilkes Conference Center, Miami University of Hamilton. And all of the information, the whole series, you can find a link to that on our website, wvxu.org. Dr. Ellison, are the lectures free and open to the public?
Yes, the lectures are free and open to the public, sponsored by Appalachian Studies at the Miami University Regional Campuses. I want to add one thing about the bluegrass performance that Brian was just speaking of. Joe Mullins and the Radio Ramblers. Joe Mullins is Paul Mullins' son. He's still based in Xenia. He's a radio broadcaster, and he's a fabulous musician. They've played on the Grand Ole Opry, and he is currently the chair of the International Bluegrass Music Association Board of Directors. So they are going to talk about and perform music from this region and music that is national music but important to this region. That will be both a discussion of the bluegrass heritage in this region and a performance of those tunes that evoke it.
And each lecture has a different topic, different speakers. You'll also touch on the connection of gospel music to bluegrass. And the final lecture, Brian Powers, happens at the Cincinnati Public Library and features an old friend.
That's right. Larry Nager's coming. Larry Nager, who a lot of people know from being a reporter here in the Cincinnati area. He wrote a lot about the music history here in Cincinnati, and a lot of people also know him as a bluegrass musician. That's brought him here to Cincinnati in the early 70s. He was part of that Main Street bluegrass music thing that was happening, and he's going to be talking about the early venues, bluegrass venues of the area.
And what is the Cincinnati Library's connection to the series?
The idea, I think, behind this was to show that there's, you know, this history in this area in Southwest Ohio, so we wanted to have a program that would be in Cincinnati. And I have done programs on Stanley Brothers and Reno and Smiley in the past, you know, on King Record stuff. So that's how I sort of got involved with this, because I was approached because I had done a few bluegrass programs at the library and they wanted to have a free program and have it in Cincinnati. And plus, we're going to have a great exhibit and we needed a place that has enough space for this big, cool traveling exhibit we're going to have.
Brian and I are fortunate to be a part of a group of people that includes Fred Bartenstein, Russ McDivitt, Joe Mullins, Matthew Smith, Sam Ashworth, Shelby Dixon, and Valerie Elliott. We're a group of people that have come together, initiated really by Fred Bartenstein, a former performer and a great student of bluegrass music who's published a lot about it. He brought us together to talk about the heritage and to see what we could do to document it and to make it known to others. And so we're having public programs. We're going to publish an anthology of essays. We have a website that people can learn about. We have an archival collection at the Smith History Library in Oxford. And we have a traveling exhibit that Brian referred to that's going to be really nice, that will move around to various sites and will be present for these events.
It's artwork. It's education, it's music, it sounds like a whole lot of fun. It makes me pretty proud to be from this region. 5 lectures and some musical performances March 7th through May 21st. It's the Bluegrass Musical Heritage of Southwestern Ohio. My guests have been Dr. Curtis Ellison, Miami University, and Brian Powers with the Cincinnati Public Library. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Elaine Deal.
I left my old Clinch Mountain home, but my daddy said don't go. God, I wish that I had listened to him then. I lost my children and my wife. Beer and whiskey wrecked my life, and I'm never gonna see my home again. Now the wind blows cold through the crack in the window. My blankets I pull up around my head. A country tall but to dream of the home I flew. On the street called doom in the house of dreams.